is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with verses 162 to 165 of chapter Al-An'am from the Holy Quran, recited by Murtaza Fatemi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Qul inna salati wa nusuki wa mahyaya wa mamati lillahi rabbil alameen la sharika lah
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful, say, surely my prayer and my sacrifice and my life and my death are all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. No associate has He, and this am I commanded, and I am the first of those who submit. Say, what shall I seek, a Lord other than Allah? And He is the Lord of all things, and no soul earns evil but against itself, and no bearer of burden shall bear the burden of another. Then to your Lord is your return, so He will inform you of that in which you differed. And He it is who has made you successors in the land and raised some of you above others by various grades, that He might try you by what He has given you. Surely, your Lord is quick to requite evil, and He is most surely the forgiving, the merciful.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Syria is calling for some serious action by the UN Security Council to put an end to Israel's illegal practices in the occupied Golan Heights. British lawmakers are suing nearly two dozen Saudi and Emirati officials, saying they're complicit in the war crimes in Yemen. Plus, Iran's top general says Tehran and Moscow are working to bolster cooperation in defense areas. The details coming up. Welcome to World News, live from our headquarters in the reigning capital, Tehran. Thank you very much for joining us. Our top story this hour: Syria believes pressure is needed to make Israel stop its violations and illegal constructions in the occupied Golan Heights. The Arab country now wants to see some action from the UN Security Council. Syria's UN envoy says Israeli efforts to change the demographics of the Golan Heights or impose its custody there will fail. Bassam Sabah noted that such measures have no legal effect under the relevant UN resolutions. He says sooner or later the occupied territory will return to Syria. Sabah also condemned Israel for the assassination of a former Syrian lawmaker last week. The Golan Heights belong to Syria and all settlements there are illegal. Israeli officials, however, say they're planning to eventually increase the settler population there fourfold. Our correspondent in Damascus, Muhammad Ali, tells us more about the Israeli violations in the Golan Heights and the specific concerns that Syria is asking the UN to help resolve. Take a listen.
He also strongly condemned the recent statements by the Israeli Prime Minister on increasing the number of settlement units and building 7,000 settlement units over there in the occupied Syrian Golan with the aim of increasing the number of Israeli settlers from 40 to 100,000. He also renewed his call again on the United Nations Security Council to exert pressure on Israel to stop its violations and illegal actions, namely, and he said, that includes the crimes, the Israeli crimes of killing, the arrests, looting of private property, and depriving the people of the Golan from their natural resources, and blocking those who left the occupied Syrian Golan for studying or for work or for any reason from returning back. He also said in his statement before the UN Security Council there in a session on the Middle East, he said that it is unacceptable anymore. It is unacceptable to see the failure of the United Nations and the international community on forcing Israel and forcing Israel to implement the UN relevant resolutions and stop Israel from its violations of human rights and international law. And stopping Israel from doing so, according to Sadbagh, can never be achieved without removing what he described as the umbrella of protection provided by the United States and its Western allies.
A major U.S. military base in Syria's southern Homs province has come under a drone attack. The strike has hit a 10th base near Syria's border with Iraq and Jordan. A U.S. official has confirmed the coordinated attack, saying no American troops stationed in the outpost has been injured or killed. According to the unnamed official, the strike appeared to include at least one drone attack and possibly ground fire. A 10th base is located in an area controlled by militants fighting the Syrian government. The United States has military forces in Syria's northeast and southwest without any authorization from Damascus. A group of British lawmakers has accused senior officials in Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates of complicity in war crimes committed in Yemen. The legal team, known as Guernica 37, has filed a complaint with British police calling for the immediate arrest of 22 Saudi and Emirati officials. The human rights lawyers are specifically focusing on two airstrikes in Yemen that have killed more than 160 people, including dozens of children. Reports of torture and murder of civilians by foreign mercenaries have also been cited in the lawsuit. Saudi Arabia, along with some of its allies, Arab allies that is, launched a devastating war on Yemen in March 2015. The conflict has so far killed tens of thousands of civilians. The United Nations Children's Agency says the crisis in Yemen has just hit another shameful milestone, as at least 10,000 Yemeni children were killed or maimed since the beginning of the Saudi-led war on Yemen in March 2015. Abdul Latif Al-Washali has more in this report.
Human suffering in Yemen has reached some staggering levels, especially for children. UNICEF spokesperson James Elders said in a press briefing following his recent visit to Yemen that at least 10,000 Yemeni children were killed or maimed since the onset of the Saudi-led war on Yemen, and many more child deaths and injuries go unrecorded by the UN.
Children have been the most affected section of the Yemeni society during the Saudi-led war on Yemen, as the Saudi coalition's warplanes target residential areas, killing children. The UN figure is not accurate, and we have some other reliable figures showing that the number is higher.
11 million children need humanitarian assistance, Elder said, including 400,000 suffering from acute malnutrition. Ali is 2.5 months old. He is suffering from severe acute malnutrition, and he may die if he did not get a proper treatment.
The real number of children suffering from severe malnutrition exceeds 1 million. The situation is deteriorating due to the continuing food crisis in the country and lack of medicines for children. The aid we receive from the UNICEF and other organizations is not enough to cope with the catastrophe.
Yemen is on the brink of famine and was described by the United Nations as the world's worst humanitarian crisis as a result of the years-long Saudi war and the blockade.
More than 6 years after the start of the brutal Saudi-led war, the endless suffering of Yemeni children continues as they are deprived of their most basic needs such as food and medicine. This has made Yemen the most difficult place in the world to be a child. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
The chief of the general staff of the Iranian armed forces says Iran and Russia have reached, quote, good agreements to bolster defense cooperation. Major General Mohammad Baghari made the remark after meeting Russian military officials in St. Petersburg. Baghari said the conclusion of the arms deals and their implementation would considerably bolster bilateral ties The top general said the two sides are also negotiating a comprehensive strategic document. He added that the document would boost cooperation in military and defense fields, including fighting terrorism and holding joint drills. Details of the Iran-Russia military agreements have not been disclosed. However, Baghari said on Monday that his visit to Russia was aimed at following up on a deal for buying fighter jets and attack helicopters. Political commentator Romero Funes says military cooperation between Russia and Iran would prevent the United States from targeting the two countries' interests.
I think the strategic alliance between Iran and Russia is a preparation for something big, because NATO, the U.S. empire, and the biggest terrorist forces around the world, they know that they are losing the global war. The peoples of the world do not want NATO. They have seen the destruction, Yugoslavia, Libya, so many, Iraq, so many nations that have been destroyed. So this new anti-imperialist military bloc has to be formed, and I'm hoping that it's not just limited to Iran and Russia. I'm hoping that it'll also extend to Latin America as well. Venezuela, we just saw Alex Saab, a Venezuelan diplomat who was kidnapped by the United States, and I think a military bloc alliance between these nations would prevent those sort of actions from happening. So this is overall a success and a strategic move by Iran.
The Air Force of the Army of the Islamic Republic of Iran has launched major maneuvers across the country, codenamed Fedayeen-e Harame Velayat-e 10. The main feature of this military drill is that all operations at different bases across the nation have been commanded online from the main headquarters in Tehran.
The Islamic Republic of Iran's Air Force has launched massive maneuvers in different locations across the country, including Isfahan, Bushehr, Bandar Abbas, Dizful, and Tabriz. The main operational phase of the large-scale drills, codenamed Fedayeen-e Harame Velayat 10, began on Thursday with the participation of manned aircraft and drones. In the first phase of the military drill, aerial targets were shot at different speed and heights. Targets were hit on the ground under different conditions with the use of homemade upgraded heavy and semi-heavy bombs. During this military drill, different types of laser and radar missiles, as well as types of rockets and bombs made by young Iranian specialists, have been used. This is the first time that all the air bases of the Army of the Islamic Republic of Iran are jointly taking part in the military maneuvers, all in their own cities, but being commanded and controlled from the main command center in Tehran. Tens of different types of fighter jets, bombers, cargo planes, reconnaissance planes, and drones have taken part in the military drill. Moreover, Camon 12 drone has successfully destroyed specific targets using smart bombs. At the same time, Karar drones, which have been equipped with 500-pound bombs and rockets, have been able to precisely hit the planned targets. Meanwhile, the manned aircraft of the Air Force of the Army, with the use of the most modern electronic war techniques, disrupted anti-air defense systems of the enemy, preparing the ground for drones to carry out their operations.
This is the first time that such military drill is being conducted all across the country. The main feature of this maneuver is a concentrated command for non-concentrated operations. All the missiles, rockets, and bombs which are being used in this military drill have been produced by Iranian specialists. We have used precision-guided Qased and Yasin bombs. Moreover, we have used our combat drones like Camon 12, which is able to strike its target from a distance of 10 to 15 kilometers.
This massive maneuver is aimed at using an integrated command and control network and supporting operational and intelligence systems in the integrated network of the Army of the Islamic Republic of Iran. In the drill, technology-based and digitalized equipment, weaponry, and systems have been used.
This military exercise shows that the Air Force of the Army is well prepared to protect the country's territorial integrity and has full control over the airspace of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
Official data show 1.7 million migrants have been arrested by U.S. authorities along the Mexico border over the past 12 months. That's the highest ever figure recorded at the border to date. The data released by the U.S. Customs and Border Protection suggests that the influx of migrants peaked in spring this year, after President Joe Biden took office. During his campaign, Biden vowed to take a more humane approach to immigration and to reverse the hardline policies of his predecessor, Donald Trump. Biden's critics, however, say his tone has encouraged illegal migration to the U.S. Rights groups have also blasted the Biden administration's treatment of migrants. North Korea has questioned the sincerity of the United States in its approach towards the country. A North Korean foreign ministry spokesman says Washington's double standards over Pyongyang's missile development cast doubts on its offers of talks. He says the U.S. slams the North for testing the same weapons it already has or was developing. The spokesman says Pyongyang's latest missile test is just part of a mid- and long-term plan to bolster the country's self-defense. The official has warned of serious consequences if the U.S. opts for what he calls wrong behavior. The North on Tuesday test-fired a submarine-launched ballistic missile. The U.S. called the launch a threat to regional peace and stability. Hundreds of non-local workers are fleeing Indian-controlled Kashmir after they were targeted by a series of shooting incidents. Since the beginning of October, more than 30 people, including Indian armed personnel, civilians, and pro-freedom fighters, have died in different incidents across the troubled Himalayan region. Shana Bhatt reports from Kashmir.
Fear is growing in Indian-controlled Kashmir following a series of shooting incidents across the region that killed around a dozen civilians, including four non-local workers. The fear doubled among the non-local residents after police said non-locals should reach army camps and police stations. Dhananjit Kumar has been working in Kashmir for the last 12 years. Each year he stays here for 6 months and returns home with his hard-earned money. But this year he's moving ahead of time.
My family back home is worried. They insisted upon my return. I have worked for so many years here, but I have never seen such chaos. The situation here has never been right, but we were never involved. This time, it's different.
Dhananjit Kumar and many like him are on the move, while many others have sought police protection till they manage a way out. Following the deadly October violence in Kashmir that resulted in more than 33 killings, which included 9 Indian Army personnel, 11 civilians, and 13 pro-freedom fighters in different incidents, the administration issued an alert across the war-weary Indian-administered Kashmir. Intelligence reports warn of attacks on power projects, emergency landing strips, and other government infrastructure. New Delhi has installed additional security forces across Kashmir after intelligence reports warned of more attacks. After India stripped Kashmir's autonomous status in August 2019, people of the region were promised development, prosperity, and greater opportunities. However, media reports suggest the situation in the region has slipped from bad to worse due to the absence of local political activities and implementation of rules and laws without taking people of Kashmir on board. Kashmir is a dispute between India and Pakistan since the partition of Indian subcontinent in 1947. The two have fought wars over the territory and claimed the region in full, but rule it in parts. The fresh spate of violence in Indian-administered Kashmir is seen by many as a politically motivated action. People of Kashmir urge the world community to help resolve this geopolitical dispute between India and Pakistan before they engage in war and devastate the leftover life. Shahana Bhatt, Indian-administered Kashmir.
And that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour, but don't go away.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
the supplication on Thursdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who has taken away the shadowy night by His power and brought the sight-giving day through His mercy. He has clothed me in its brightness and given me its favor. O Allah, just as Thou hast spared me for this day, so also spare me for its likes. Bless the Prophet Muhammad and his household, and torment me not in it and in other nights and days by allowing me to commit unlawful acts and to clothe myself in sins. Provide me with its good, the good of all within it, and the good of everything after it, and turn away from me its evil, the evil of all within it, and the evil of everything after it. O Allah, by the protective compact of Islam, I seek mediation with Thee, and by the inviolability of the Quran, I rely upon Thee. By Muhammad, the Chosen, Allah bless him and his household, I seek intercession with Thee. So recognize my protective compact, by which I hope my need will be granted. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, decree for me on Thursday five things, which none embraces but Thy generosity, and none supports but Thy favors. Health through which I may have the strength to obey Thee. Worship by which I may deserve Thy plentiful reward. Plenty in my state through lawful provision. And that Thou makest me secure in the places of fear through Thy security. And placest me in Thy fortress against the striking of worries and sorrows. Bless Muhammad and his household. And make my seeking his mediation as an intercessor give profit on the day of resurrection. Surely, Thou art the most merciful of the merciful.
The U.S. Supreme Court on Monday, 18th of October, signaled that it is not retreating from its inclination to grant a legal protection called qualified immunity to police officers accused in lawsuits of using excessive force, ruling in favor of officers on Monday in separate cases from California and Oklahoma. The article you're about to hear has been written by journalists Andrew Chung and Lawrence Hurley. It has been taken from the Reuters news agency. The piece is titled U.S. Supreme Court Again Protects Police Accused of Excessive Force. The U.S. Supreme Court on Monday, 18th of October, signaled that it is not retreating from its inclination to grant a legal protection called qualified immunity to police officers accused in lawsuits of using excessive force, ruling in favor of officers on Monday in separate cases from California and Oklahoma. The justices overturned a lower court's decision allowing a trial in a lawsuit against police officers Josh Gerdner and Brandon Vick over the 2016 fatal shooting of a hammer-wielding man in Tahlequah, Oklahoma, Tuesday also overturned a lower court's decision to deny a request by police officer Daniel Rivas Villegas for qualified immunity in a lawsuit accusing him of using excessive force in 2016 while handcuffing a suspect in Union City, California. The brief rulings were unsigned, with no public dissents among the justices in the cases. Both decided without oral arguments. The qualified immunity defense protects police officers and other government officials from civil litigation in certain circumstances, permitting lawsuits only when an individual's clearly established statutory or constitutional rights have been violated. The rulings indicated that the Supreme Court justices think lower courts still are denying qualified immunity too frequently in police excessive force cases, having previously chided appeal courts on that issue in recent years. These are not the actions of a court that is likely to end or seriously reform qualified immunity, Chris Kemet, a lawyer with the NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund Civil Rights Group, wrote on Twitter. A 2020 Reuters investigation revealed how qualified immunity, with the Supreme Court's continual refinements, has made it easier for police officers to kill or injure civilians with impunity. In the Oklahoma case, police officers responded to a complaint by the former wife of the slain man, Dominic Rollis, that he was inebriated and in her garage. Officers told Dominic Rollis they were not there to arrest him, but rather to give him a ride out of there, according to court papers, but he refused to go with them. A lower court found that the police officers then advanced on Rollis, prompting him to back up and grab a hammer that he held above his head and refused to drop. When Rollis appeared to raise the hammer further, police officers Gertner and Vick fired multiple times, killing him. A third officer had decided that the situation called for him to go less lethal by putting his firearm in his holster and using his stun gun instead. Dominic Rollis' estate sued police officers Gertner and Vick, accusing them of using excessive force in violation of the U.S. Constitution's Fourth Amendment prohibition on unreasonable searches and seizures. The police said they used force because they feared Rollis would charge at them or throw the hammer. The Denver-based 10th U.S. District Court of Appeals in 2020 denied the police officers qualified immunity, finding that they may have unjustifiably escalated the situation. The Supreme Court on Monday, 18th of October, declined to decide whether recklessly creating a situation that requires deadly force can itself violate the Fourth Amendment, instead saying that no prior case had clearly established that the police officer's actions were illegal. In the California case, the justices ruled in favor of Rivas Villegas for the same reason. That case involved the arrest of a man named Ramon Cortes Luna at his home. Police officer Rivas Villegas used his foot to push Cortes Luna down and then pressed his knee into the man's back whilst another police officer handcuffed him. The San Francisco-based 9th U.S. District Court of Appeals last year ruled that Cortes Luna's excessive force claim could go to trial, noting that the suspect had been prone and not resisting. Congressional Democrats have sought to rein in qualified immunity as part of legislation to reform police practices. The House of Representatives passed a Democratic-based bill that would eliminate qualified immunity for law enforcement. But the U.S. Senate talks between Democrats and Republicans on police reform collapsed last month.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Unemployment in the Gaza Strip.
How's your work? What have you accomplished? Not much. We stopped the construction of the house because of the construction materials crisis in the Gaza Strip. There are no construction materials available, no cement, no steel, and no whitewash. Most construction materials stopped entering the Strip due to the Egyptian army's military operations in the Sinai. In addition, they have already destroyed most of the tunnels between Egypt and Gaza, through which all materials used to enter. Now they have disappeared from the local market. On the other hand, Israel has been blocking all crossings to the Gaza Strip for 7 years.
When we decided to expose the problem of unemployment in the Gaza Strip, we were confused about a starting point, but we met with an informative colleague, Mr. Atif Isa, who paved the way for us. He told us about his suffering over 7 years in building his dream house, which is still under construction at the moment. According to his plan, it was supposed to be done 5 years ago.
According to my house plan, the house is supposed to be ready now, and I would have moved into it. But as you can see, it seems to be ready from the outside, but work still needs to be done. These days, I am supposed to have at least 5 or 6 teams working at the same time. These teams provide job opportunities to about 30 or 40 workers. That means there are 30 to 40 families that used to have income, but not anymore because I have stopped the building of my house. I'm the head of a family of 6 people. All I want is a job opportunity, and everything will go fine with me. I wish other workers could work too, like the old days of working in a team. There were supposed to be more than 20 workers working on this scaffolding. However, there are only 2 or 3 people because of the shortage in construction materials. Their being here is inconsistent. As you can see, no improvements seem to occur.
These 2 workers are the only ones among over 30 who continued working here to make a living. Ibrahim, Raed's colleague and cousin, is the only one who remained to work with him, doing some modest jobs, despite knowing very well that he's not the right person in the right place.
I have learned the Holy Quran by heart and studied at private schools. Then I pursued my study in Malaysia at East Asia University. My major was the Prophet's Hadith. After that, I came back to Gaza. As you can see, I work in construction. We have no chance to work in related fields. The crossings are blocked, and there aren't any projects or development. There is nothing. There are approximately 35,000 unemployed graduates. Because of the blockade, this number has risen in light of the rapid increase in the number of graduates from the Palestinian and Arab universities. This means that there is a large number of graduates per year. More than 10,000 graduates join the previous number of the unemployed because of the lack of opportunities.
Hamza Hassan from the Beach refugee camp has joined the army of the unemployed after 4 years of study in the English literature department at the Faculty of Arts. 2 years after graduation, he lives a conflict between dreaming of a certificate and looking for any job, even if it's not related to his field of study.
I graduated from university after 4 years of studying English literature. I and most of the other young people were surprised with the fact that there are no work opportunities. Even if one does not want to work in one's field of study, it is hopeless. Youth also suffer from boredom. Young people spend some time out, just like myself. We spend most of our time in having food, sleeping, and hanging out.
The Gaza Strip is surrounded by 7 crossings. The Rafah crossing is the only one connecting the Gaza Strip with an Arab country, Egypt. But the other 6 crossings are fully controlled by the Israeli occupation. And most of them are completely blocked most of the time. The only commercial crossing left partially open is the Kerem Shalom crossing. It is controlled by the Israeli soldiers moved.
The needs of the Gaza Strip exceed 800 trucks a day. Meanwhile, the Israeli occupation prevents more than 480 to 500 trucks from entering Gaza. These goods are very important for the development of the Palestinian economy and include all raw materials, machinery, and equipment required for the development of the economy or solving the problems of production lines. I am Majid Abdul Hafiz Abu Salim. I own a sewing factory that produces bags. This bag factory has stopped working for a long time because of the siege and the occupation. This is a leather sewing machine that we use in producing leather bags. All these machines as well. As you see, they are all off. There were 12 to 15 workers. However, after the blockade, the factory has stopped. All the workers have lost their jobs and spend their time at home or in hanging out. I used to work as a tailor. I haven't worked for almost 9 years now because of the siege, the blockade, and the Israeli restrictions. I have 6 daughters, 3 sons, and there's my wife and I. I cannot fulfill their needs. We're currently living by help and aid. Our life is very difficult, and the unemployment rate has become great. When school started, I didn't buy new bags, clothes, or anything for my kids because I was not ready to buy them their school needs and let them suffer hunger later. Thank God I'm not renting my house. May Allah help those who rent. I am not renting, though I suffer very much. الله يساعد المتأجرين دور يعني أنا داري مش متأجرها ووضعي كئيب جدا جدا أنا سجين وبعد ساكن بيت إيجار. I am a deported prisoner and I am renting a house. Currently my family lives by relief supplies and aid. There isn't a job opportunity and the situation is really difficult. As you see, I have 6 kids. Come in please. This is one of my 6 kids. Please come in. This is Muhammad. He is sick. What does he suffer from? He has convulsions, epilepsy, mental retardation, and speech difficulties. If he walks along the street, he wouldn't know where he is going. Every time he goes out by himself, I go bring him from a different place.
My sister-in-law has got rid of this closet, and I thought of removing my kids' clothes into it instead of being on the floor. All the kids' clothes are damaged. If my husband had a job with a monthly income of $200, not $400, it would be enough to pay for the owner of the house the first month. And the next month, we could buy a closet like most of the people. We could buy a bed for ourselves. We had a bed and a closet when we got married, but we sold them to afford the housing rent because the house owners would kick us out. They're not tolerant and they would ask for their money. The house does not have appropriate doors or windows, but we had no choice.
I tried to get a job. I worked as a taxi driver, but it wasn't helping because of the fuel crisis. And if you want to do something else, it must be at the expense of your health. I used to work in construction, but construction has stopped in the strip. The crossings are all blocked, and the situation is very bad. The construction materials are very expensive and rare. I am sick and can't do tiring work. In winter, water reaches up to this level. Even when I tried to make a hole in the wall to let the water out, some of the street water started flooding, and its level was higher than the kids' knees. We used to fill 6 or 7 buckets with water to get rid of it. People like winter, but I don't. I don't like it because it is tiring. This is our kitchen. The walls are cracked because of the rocket shelling during the war.
The Shaban's house is already cracked by poverty and also by the missiles of the two wars on Gaza, the 2008-2009 war and the late 2012 war. The Israeli rockets accurately hit targets other than the Shaban's house. They destroyed nearly 1,000 of a total of 4,000 industrial facilities. Many of the rest have completely stopped working due to the blockade imposed on the Gaza Strip since mid-2007.
This factory used to work in concrete in the Gaza Strip. It provided job opportunities to about 70 workers. During the pre-war period, we had 17 mixing vehicles and 7 concrete pumps. 10 of these vehicles were destroyed, and only 7 remained. In spite of this, I want to bring this factory to life again to make a living. I want to contribute to the reconstruction of Gaza, but now there are small quantities of goods entering Gaza. More than 3,900 factories have stopped either completely or partly as a result of the prevention of raw materials and production requirements from coming in. Moreover, the Israeli occupation bombed many industrial facilities during the last two wars on the Strip. Most of the destroyed institutions started having problems with any production process. This made more than 45,000 workers, only in the field of production and industry, lose their jobs, which has led to an increase in unemployment.
With the siege tightening and factories systematically destroyed by the Israeli occupation, Gazans are tempted to break the siege through digging underground tunnels along the border with Egypt to bring in their daily needs of food and medications, as well as raw materials that may contribute to operating some industrial facilities in one way or another.
Many industrial institutions and laborers were working when some of the materials were allowed in through the tunnels. This softened the effects of the siege on the Strip. These tunnels, or the ground crossings as we call them, provided job opportunities to 35,000 workers in the construction sector and other industrial sectors through the entry of raw materials. My basic profession is sewing. As you know, sewing is not common now. We used to have orders from the north of Palestine. The crossings are blocked now, and there are no exchanges with Israel. In general, the sewing profession has stopped now, and I came to Rafah. In Rafah, there were opportunities and tunnels. Our area of concentration was construction materials, and especially gravel. Lately, transporting gravel has become difficult, so we started transporting goods. Merchants started providing us with goods through the tunnels. We rebuilt the factory. It used to give jobs to 70 employees. Now we are running one factory with one operational capacity. There used to be 70 people, but now there are only 30.
Tunnels became a lifeline for the residents of the Gaza Strip. The economy began to recover, and unemployment rates were significantly reduced, either because of work in the tunnels or the supply of goods, especially with thousands of tons of cement, steel, and gravel arriving daily. All of that led to dozens of large enterprises, including the reconstruction of Gaza after the Israeli destruction of thousands of houses and public facilities. But all of these improvements have stopped with the demolition of the tunnels. Gaza became besieged again, causing the unemployment rates to increase.
There is destruction in tunnels. Every day, a cement or steel tunnel is destroyed. The tunnel line requires at least 20 workers. It may be more, but there are not less than 20. The Egyptians said they have destroyed 350 tunnels. This is what has been destroyed. We don't know whether they have destroyed the rest or not. They have demolished 300 or 360 tunnels, each requiring 20 workers. This means that a total of about 6,000 workers are now unemployed. Relying on tunnels was not on the agenda of the Palestinians. This means bringing in food, clothes, and medication through the tunnels. But the phenomenon was forced on the Gazans, leaving them with no choice. Thus began the circle of providing jobs to the deprived in construction and production factories because of the Israeli restrictions. When Egyptian security takes an action in this regard, along with not allowing these materials to officially enter the strip, the problem of unemployment will become worse. I was doing well, and now I've got 30 workers. However, if tunnels remain blocked, I will reduce the number to half because there are no goods coming in. I recently divided the workers into two groups. Each works for 15 days. If the situation remains the same, I may lay off 15 workers, and I will cause the destruction of 15 families. I was working for a short period of time. Now I have stopped because there is no cement. I have 13 people in my house. Four of my sons are unemployed. They are all illiterate. No one else is employed. I have to take care of my daughters, my wife, and my daughters-in-law. The situation used to be different. There were job opportunities, and life went on. We used to work and make a living for the family. Life was better. Nowadays, the situation is different because there are no goods or cement, the crossings are blocked, and there's a siege imposed. I don't use the work equipment I have, and I have to afford the living expenses of 13 people.
Everybody is unemployed. There is no chance for construction workers, laborers, and contractors. They're all unemployed. Where will they find jobs? Even employees are complaining about the hard situation. If you intend to borrow some money from an employee, he will tell that his salary is hardly enough for him and his children. For those who receive salaries at the end of the month, they keep telling that it's not enough. An employee's salary is $400. Is it enough? The doctor with a certificate does not find work, as well as the engineer. Are there any projects or hospitals that provide work chances? Let new factories open to help workers find a chance. Is there electricity for factory work? If there were factories and construction projects, no one would need anyone else. We wouldn't need anything from the Israeli occupation, and no one would starve, because when a worker gets a chance, sometimes it's going to be much better than an employee's.
There was a project to develop the beach, thus expanding the street by the beach, but the work stopped. Look at this sidewalk. They are supposed to be paving another lane of the street. During the time I spent heading to the office or going home, I used to see many machines, engineers, and laborers working on the project. However, they aren't working anymore due to the lack of construction materials and fuel. This caused the company to stop the development of the street. In addition, many of the workers and engineers who used to work on the project stopped and became a part of the unemployed sector that already existed in the Gaza Strip.
The continuous closure of tunnels and the border crossings does not only exacerbate the high rates of unemployment, it also severely affects the performance of factories, the supply, the local market with many essential products.
After stopping our work and having it ruined, you can see that we are hunting for work and making a wallet or repairing a bag, just like that. During the past 6 months, we noticed a slowdown in the sectors of clothes and sewing. That happened because of the lack of activation. You can add to this the productive and service sectors. They would be severely affected, and we would go back to the time, before 3 or 4 years ago, when there was great unemployment, a lack of goods and materials needed daily, and a growing crisis in many sectors that would unfortunately worsen the humanitarian and social problems in the Gaza Strip. I was affected anyway. I cannot even fulfill the requirements of my customers or serve their interest. I pack gravel, but I can't do the same with cement. However, there is no cement, and when it is available, I can work with other workers. You can see that nobody works. Cars do not work, or employees either. Some workers come here seeking a chance at work, but I tell them there are no construction materials. If you can bring me any materials in the local market, I am ready to give you a chance at work. I've got the money and the intention. I am also in a hurry. I need to move to my new house. Today we ordered the bricks. The factory said that the bricks are not ready because there is no cement. I have been asking a blacksmith to build me a stair rod. The blacksmith agrees to make me one, but says we should agree on something first. He asks for extra money. When I ask about the reason, he says because there is no steel.
Freezing of small or large projects, the obstruction of industrial facilities, and the increase of the unemployment rate to more than 40% are all considered disasters that threaten to affect a wide range of the population of the Gaza Strip.
I and my sister-in-law were in the kitchen. My son was standing here, and my sister-in-law's sons were there. I was preparing milk for my son, and he was catching my clothes crying. The boiling pan slipped from my hand and burnt it. I should have gone to the hospital, but I couldn't afford it. I didn't have $1 to go to the hospital. I had a bacterium in the blood, and the doctor told me that this infection was caused by a polluted environment. I told him about the condition of our house, and during winter, my house becomes full of water. He said that was the reason. I recently had some analysis and found that I have problems in my chest. The doctor said I need medical treatment, and the prescription contained only 2 pills that cost $30, and I can't afford buying one. How would I buy those pills? The doctor gave it to me for free once because he knows about my situation. He also treats my patient's son and follows his case. He paid for the medication that time, but how would I afford paying for the rest? How can I buy 2 pills for $30?
The Palestinians are steadfast and patient people. They have been suffering, but they are aware that the main reason is the Zionist occupation. The occupation has been trying to suppress the Palestinians, but we say that they are patient, steadfast, and will continue to be so. They will keep fighting the occupier with their steadfastness and an honorable attitude opposing these conspiracies.
Unity Week. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. We are in the Unity Week. This week begins on the 12th and ends on the 17th of the Islamic month of Rabiul Awwal. Sayyid ibn Tawus, one of the celebrated Muslim scholars of the past centuries, writes, God the Exalted said to Adam to look at his progeny. Prophet Adam saw among his progeny a group whose light had engulfed everywhere with a special brightness. Adam asked God, My Lord, who are these? God answered, These are the messengers from your progeny. Adam asked, My God, why is the light of the last one of the messengers brighter? God said, Because of his superiority over all messengers and saints. He asked, Who is this messenger and what is his name? God said, This is Muhammad. The messenger, the prophet, the noble, the confident, the elect, the pure, the friend, the dearest creature with me and the most loved, the nearest and most known among my creatures. As for knowledge, forbearance, faith, certitude, chastity, humbleness, asceticism, and obedience, He is superior to all of them. I have taken pledge from the carriers of my throne and other creatures in the heavens and the earth to have faith in him and to admit his prophethood. O Adam, have faith in him so that your position, merit, light, and esteem would increase with me. Adam said, I have faith in God and his prophet, Muhammad. God said, So I increased your merit and nobility. O Adam, you are the first among my messengers, and Muhammad is the last of them. A study of the Noble Quran reveals that all previous nations and messengers had been obligated to admit the prophethood of the Prophet of Islam as the seal of all prophets. Ayah 81 of Surah Al-Imran reads, When Allah took a compact concerning the prophets, inasmuch as I have given you of the book and wisdom, should an apostle come to you thereafter, confirming what is with you, You shall believe in him and help him. According to this ayah, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, was quite known to other prophets. In view of this, the exegetes of the Noble Quran maintain that the most important feature of the prophet is that His name had been mentioned in the books of other religions. Ayah 157 of Surah A'raf reads in this regard, "Those who follow the apostle, the uninstructed prophet, whose mention they find written in the Torah and the Evangel." Ayah 146 of Surah Baqarah also reads, "Those whom we have given the book recognize him just as they recognize their sons." Thus, the characteristics of the Prophet of Islam had been clearly mentioned in the previous scriptures. Historical accounts show that Prophet Jesus, peace upon him, used to speak of the signs of the emergence of the last prophet. He would give good tidings of the coming of Prophet Muhammad as the last messenger of God to mankind. German psychologist Carl Jaspers writes, "What we know of Jesus with more certainty are his good news. Some of these good news about the last messenger are in the Torah and the Evangel. In the book of John, part 14, paragraph 16, we read,